saying we haven't made mistakes, but collateral damage is always at the forefront of the decision-making process. Thank you, Admiral. Mitch, please continue.
Yes, sir. The President has the authority to authorize targeted elimination operations and indeed has the responsibility to do so, which is derived from his constitutional authority to protect the American people. Targeting a U.S. citizen is lawful if that citizen has joined Al-Qaeda or an associated terrorist organization or is providing support for imminent terrorist operations. The Supreme Court has found that the use of force is justified against U.S. citizens who have taken up arms against their country or pledged allegiance to a terrorist organization. It is consistent with the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. Targeting a citizen posing a clear and present danger would not violate criminal provisions, nor would it constitute a war crime. Congress has authorized the President to use all necessary and appropriate force against Al-Qaeda and its associated terrorist organizations through the AUMF. Also supporting this opinion is the national right to self-defense via international law, specifically UN Charter, Article 51.
Are there any territorial parameters? The President asked.
Sir, the AUMF does not specify geographic limitations. It's termed a non-international armed conflict.
What constitutes an imminent threat?
If there is a gray area here, that's it, sir. As we all know, war with proxies, non-state actors, and super-empowered individuals like bin Laden is not a conventional war between nation-states with clearly defined areas of operation. Terrorist organizations are continually planning. If they conducted an operation in the past, there is a high probability that they are still in the network and planning future attacks. Therefore, a targeted elimination would not be an act of revenge, but an act of self-defense to protect the American people from violence.
If I may, sir, Farber interjected. The concept of imminence is subject to interpretation, meaning it must be formulated and argued. Does imminent constitute a day, a week, or a month? And if there is no guarantee that a window to strike based on actionable intelligence, which might also be the only window, will align perfectly with a predetermined criterion of imminence.
Thank you, Greg, the President responded, turning back to the White House counsel. If it has been determined that members of a terrorist organization have planned attacks in the past, then legally, whether a day has passed or 20 years, they remain viable targets. Is that correct?
Legally, yes, Cohen answered.
And rendition operations fall into that legal framework?
Yes, sir. Providing adherence to the law of war principles, necessity, distinction, proportionality, and humanity, i.e. collateral damage.
Have they forfeited their rights as U.S. citizens? Admiral Lowe asked.
Yes. Actions hostile toward the United States constitute a forfeiture of citizenship. Legally, they would still be targetable with lethal force due to imminent threat, but to answer your question directly, a U.S. citizen gives up his or her citizenship, what the law calls a loss of nationality, when he or she engages in hostilities against the United States. U.S. citizenship does not guarantee immunity in armed conflict. The Supreme Court has held that the President may authorize lethal force against a U.S. citizen who is an enemy combatant. It is considered an act of treason, a capital crime. A lawfully targeted elimination is consistent with the principles of national self-defense. The important takeaway, Mr. President, is that lethal force cannot be used as a punishment for past acts, only to prevent future acts, as with Admiral Yamamoto in World War II.
I'm clear on the legality. Ms. Motley, the President said, addressing his CIA director, what is the position of the CIA?
Mr. President, Motley said, my organization operates in accordance with strict criteria. The target is confirmed as present, and there are no combatants within the blast radius. Capture is not feasible. The foreign government is not capable of addressing the threat to the United States, and no other reasonable alternatives exist.
And in terms of effectiveness, are we just creating more terrorists in a game of whack-a-mole?
Janice Motley had risen through the ranks on the Hill, first as a legislative assistant before becoming the lead staff attorney for the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. It was in that position where she had caught the eye of the then CIA director, who began grooming her for an executive position in America's premier intelligence organization. She would eventually become the staff director of the SSCI before accepting a position on President Obama's National Security Transition Team, which would lead her to acting director of the National Clandestine Service and then into the role of America's top spy. She was the second female director in CIA history and the first African-American woman to hold the position. Those who briefed her would walk in familiar with her background and reputation as one of the smartest people in the Beltway. They would walk out with a newfound respect. In addition to being a brilliant strategist, she was tough as nails.
That is certainly a probability, Mr. President.
Then why do we continue to execute a policy with long-term results inconsistent with the investment? Without missing a beat, the director of the CIA answered the query.
Previous administrations have continued the program and even escalated it to keep the enemy off balance, Mr. President. Our signals intelligence supports the contention that while it does assist in enemy recruitment efforts, it also continues to disrupt the planning process. I'll have my office send over a classified white paper detailing the threats to the homeland prevented by the strike program.
It's insurgent math, Mr. President,
Admiral Lowe offered.
Insurgent math?
For every terrorist killed, we create 10 more. Stan McChrystal arithmetic, Mr. President.
I see.
Administrations of both parties have operated under the president's constitutional authority to protect the nation, Cohen added. These actions are supported by al-Awlaki v. Obama and Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, the inherent right of the United States to protect itself under international law, and the congressional authorization for the use of military force against AQ and associated groups.
I'd like to hear Mr. Rodriguez's thoughts, the president said.
In his early 50s, Vic was the most junior member of the group. He remembered asking new members of his Special Forces ODA for their opinion during debriefs when he was a young SF captain with 7th Special Forces Group. The president was a veteran and was doing the same thing.
Sir, my team has studied this at length in accordance with the Office of the General Counsel at CIA. As you are aware, my department offers another option if the conversation in question is specific to the effectiveness of using unmanned aerial vehicles to deliver a lethal payload. The enemy can use Google, just like the rest of us. They have studied our tactics and know exactly what we just discussed in this secure conference room. They know our aversion to collateral damage, which is why you rarely find senior Al-Qaeda or ISIS leadership alone. They surround themselves with non-combatants, specifically women and children. My office offers a different option, one that is much more personal and also more dangerous from a commitment of forces standpoint. A single operative or a small team from my side of the house can, at times, be a viable alternative.
The president looked at his national security advisor and then back at the leader of the CIA's paramilitary division.
Assassins?
No, Mr. President. Hunter killers. Ground branch operatives who understand the nature of the conflict necessitates them getting close to eliminate the threat, limiting collateral damage that can't be positively identified from a Reaper firing a Hellfire at 50,000 feet. A covert action statute authorized under Title 50 of the U.S. Code is an option we've exercised in the past.
Director Motley.
Mr. President, this agency is not in the business of creating more terrorists. The targeted killing program under President Obama rose to levels inconsistent with desired end results. Human intelligence networks with proxy forces targeting the enemy run by ground branch operators are high risk, but they lower the potential of creating more terrorists vis-a-vis the insurgent math Admiral Lowe referenced. When a hellfire hits a moving vehicle from out of the blue, there is only one country to blame, the United States. An IED or well-placed bullet, on the other hand, well, responsibility for that type of operation offers plausible deniability.
Alec Christensen leaned back in his chair and touched both forefingers to his lips.
My duty as President of the United States is to protect the American people.
Having fought in Afghanistan, I am distinctly aware that we now have soldiers patrolling those same mountains who were not even born on September 11, 2001. They are fighting the sons of men we targeted in the opening years of the war. It is my job to see that the grandchildren of those I fought don't put Americans in the sights of their AKs. Find me solutions. I want a briefing on the disposition matrix, the kill list, for lack of a better term, with best and worst case scenarios attached to each target. And I want options other than UAVs, he said, looking directly at Vic. Greg will coordinate a follow-up meeting. Now, let's go through today's PDB. For the remainder of the briefing, questions were directed to Motley and Lowe by the president and his national security advisor. Vic's mind focused on the fact that his office might be getting a lot busier in the weeks and months ahead. It scarcely registered that the president's daily brief contained information on a hemorrhagic virus outbreak in Angola and that 457 people had perished before it had been contained by the World Health Organization. Director Motley and Vic Rodriguez exited the Situation Room and took the stairs up to West Executive Avenue, where the director's motorcade was waiting to take them back to Langley. They did not speak until the heavy door to the up-armored black Suburban closed behind them.
That was interesting, Vic said.
Motley nodded, still deep in thought.
I know you have teams downrange working through host nation forces, but from the tone of the briefing, we might be taking a more unilateral approach.
It certainly sounded like the president does not favor relying on UAVs as the preferred method of engagement,
Vic agreed.
I'll have counsel compile a history of the legal justifications for each targeted elimination and rendition since the AUMF. We certainly don't want any of our people in the hot seat at the change of administrations, like we had with enhanced interrogations.
That she immediately thought of protecting those on the ground doing the nation's work was why she had the respect of the case officers, paramilitary officers, and contractors she led. It was a rare quality in Washington.
I agree. I get the feeling the president is after more than just finishing what was started under the Bush administration,
Vic noted.
I had that feeling as well. Did you catch the U.S. soil comment?
The former Special Forces officer asked his boss.
I did.
There's something else at play, he said.
What do you make of it?
I think it has something to do with James Reese.
Chapter 16. Denver, Colorado. Dr. Ali Reza Ansari pulled his rental car close to the curb in front of the aging home. A green Subaru, extremely popular in these parts, was parked in the driveway. Ali noted that it had not been backed in. The bike was on the roof rack, signaling that it was safe to approach. Still, Ali was cautious. If the FBI were on to them, this would be the time they would make their arrests, before the deadly virus could be replicated. Ali had supervised the construction from afar. The Hawala network transferred more than funds, it passed information. The network of couriers had no idea what they were passing or why. The messages had been hand-carried from Switzerland into the United States. Ali suspected he would have to make a few adjustments, but as long as all the materials were there and the monkey kidney cells had been prepared as he had instructed, he would be able to complete the next phase of the operation. His priority was to use the scanning electron microscope to ensure the cells contained no contaminants and exhibited the stable growth factors necessary to cultivate the virus. He had informed Biodyne that he'd decided to take 2 weeks and tour the United States before returning to Europe. He would be reachable for Zoom conference calls and would be answering his emails. The drive from the East Coast had taken 4 days. He could have done it in two, but he'd explored along the way, not because he was interested in the sights and history between the Atlantic seaboard and the Continental Divide, but because he was looking for surveillance. He was certain that the Americans were not conducting physical surveillance, but these days, with drones and the interconnected web of the surveillance state,
it was nearly impossible to tell if they were tracking you electronically. Ali had always been careful. All his military, intelligence, medical, and business training had culminated in what he was about to do. This was his moment of truth. Ali approached the front door and knocked 3 times. The door opened immediately. The young student had been eagerly waiting.
"Assalamu alaikum," Sebastian said. "Never use Arabic or Farsi with me," Ali said, pushing past the young medical student and making his way inside.
Worn hardwood flooring in dire need of attention led to a small living area, where a couch too small for the space faced an old brick fireplace that at one point had been painted white in a failed attempt at modernization.
"Do you have a cell phone?"
Ali asked.
"Yes, but it's in my apartment. I've never taken it here."
"Good," Ali said, still weary, as he entered the small kitchen. An avocado-green refrigerator hummed away next to a 4-burner electric stove, and a microwave sat at an angle on the rust-colored countertop. Ali parted the thin drapes above the sink and looked into the street beyond the yard. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. No vans with tinted windows, no unmarked Crown Victorias desperately trying to fit in.
"Show me," Ali said.
Sebastian led the way to a door off the hallway and unlocked the deadbolt. His hands trembled for just a moment in anticipation. Ali knew all about Shahram Pahlavi. The regime had groomed him since birth through his parents, who were long-term penetration agents. The Americans were so stupid. Why they kept allowing the sons and daughters of those who wanted to destroy them inside their country baffled him. You did not see Americans flocking to Iran, Russia, China, or North Korea to conduct subversion operations and change the fabric of those societies. That is why those countries would endure, and why America was doomed to fail. Shahram seemed eager to please. By design, he knew next to nothing about the Biodyne executive who now followed him into the makeshift lab. No name, no background. Ali already had a plan to kill him after his usefulness expired. Ali surveyed the virology lab. Clear plastic sheets, the ventilation system duct-taped to the outside vents, the state-of-the-art lab equipment he had ordered through intermediaries was all set up and running.
"I need to check the cells," he said.
Sebastian tapped the space key and brought the computer monitor to life. The high-resolution black-and-white image came into focus, displaying what looked like a worm with one end curled into a ball.
"Just as I was instructed. They've been growing for 28 days. 15 separate cell lines, no contaminants."
Ali moved in front of the keyboard and zoomed in on the cells, confirming what the younger man had told him. Nodding, Ali asked,
"What do you know about Marburg variant U?"
Sebastian swallowed. He knew the story. It was a case study in improper safety protocols when handling level 4 pathogens.
"Marburg variant U? His visitor couldn't have a sample of that, could he?"
"Marburg, a virus first discovered in a lab in Marburg, Germany, in green monkeys from Central Africa. They were working with kidney cells, just like these," Sebastian said, nodding at the cultures just beyond the clear plastic slats.
"That's right. That was 1967. Monkey handlers in Marburg, Frankfurt, and Belgrade were all infected. They died in ways the researchers had not seen in their previous experiments. The virus liquefied organs and brain cells. Almost 10 years later, 430 people died in Zaire and Sudan with similar symptoms to what had been observed in Marburg. But this was another filovirus. Ebola. Ebola Zaire and Ebola Sudan," Ali corrected. "I studied Ebola," Sebastian said. "Under a microscope like this one, filovirus strains look almost the same. Ebola's mortality rate is between 70% and 90%. For our purposes, we need something even more toxic."
"Marburg?"
"Not just any strain of Marburg. Variant U.
That is one of the most closely guarded pathogens on the planet. Only the Russians have a strain, if memory serves.
Not just the Russians, Sebastian. With the fall of the Soviet Union, their scientists were more than willing to sell it. China has it, North Korea has it, Iran has it, and most importantly, the Americans have it.
Where did we get this strain? Sebastian asked.
Ali paused.
Where do you think?
Iran?
Instead of confirming, Ali continued.
What do you know about bioweapons?
My studies have all been on virology and immunology, not weaponizing viruses.
I will guide you through this. Before we begin, it is important for you to understand just how careful we need to be. You've done a more than adequate job setting up the lab in accordance with my instructions. What we don't have is a decontamination station. I didn't have you build one because it wouldn't matter. If you prick yourself,